Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal Brothers every week on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century Never Never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to the series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast. Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 3.8, It's a Diddle, where you're discussing the book Johannes Cabal, the Necromancer. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Amber.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hi, hi.
Chapter 8. Johannes Cabal's passion is ignited as he finds himself at odds with the competing carnival proprietor and takes measures to settle the matter. Chapter 8, in which Cabal is educated in business affairs and undertakings are undertook.
Indeed.
Yes.
Many business undertakings.
Mm-hmm. So we start the chapter off with Cabal examining his soul chart when the mayor of Merslaw comes a-knockin'.
Yes. I like that the Merslaw citizens reward Cabal's heroism from the previous battle with Malificaris with more carnival attendance. So he now has the doors being broken down by thankful citizens.
Right.
Willing and able to sign up.
I'll be honest, I didn't get the joke about the mayor until I heard the audiobook of this section. Because I think like when I was reading it, my brain just sort of filled in the important bits. But when I heard it being read out loud, it just sounded like a bunch of nonsense words. And I was like, okay, that's really funny.
Which joke about the mayor?
How the mayor
doesn't use any verbs.
He doesn't say anything. He just, good show.
Good show. Yes. Yeah, actually my favorite part. 2 months previously, a disgruntled alderman had almost managed to close them down for health and safety infractions. Cabal hadn't felt like pointing out that the carnival's governing body, Hell, only has a sort of health and safety regulations that make sure both are seriously threatened. So, yeah, the mayor is clearly out of his element and has very little to say. Perhaps.
Not a lot of substance, that man.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But it's good because he interrupts Cabal as he's going over his soul chart, which is fairly healthy. Gives him a 2-week wiggle room, which is not terrible. Is there 52 weeks in a year, right?
Yep. I like that he's got a
set
chart.
To finish about, right?
That's pretty fun.
I think I would too, though, because that's the fun part about achieving things is like crossing it off the list, right?
Like, see your soul growth chart.
Yeah, like doing stuff sucks, but crossing it off the list rocks.
Right.
So I think like that would be the fun part for me is just being able to watch my chart slowly fill in, you know, like a fundraiser for souls.
see that green bar raise?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is probably red, but otherwise.
What is the color of a soul?
Yeah.
That's getting deep.
Black and all-encompassing.
Well, at least the balls is, maybe.
For sure.
Yeah.
So the mayor.
Ebullient man. I love that. But ebullient. Do you know what the word ebullient means?
I don't.
Cheerful and full of energy, or in reference to liquid or matter, boiling or agitated as if boiling. So,
well, that is Cabal's kind of man.
He is an ebullient man.
So it makes sense with all of like the half thoughts popping up here and there.
little bubbles.
Words.
Sparks of steam and then gone.
Nonsensical. Yeah.
It was a great punchline. You know, that he suffers great head injury, that he has a future in politics.
Right. Well, it's fun too, because Cabal is instantly like, listen, what can I help you with? I'm at your mercy. I'm whatever you want. Like, tell me. And the mayor just wants to meet him.
Yes. Just,
hi, I want to step into your office. I'm the mayor.
I feel important.
I'm the mayor. You're the guy who stopped a war yesterday. What up? It's like, it's an almost entirely useless scene. But then again, the mayor is an almost entirely useless character. So it works. It's just meant to be.
What a great character. Like, I mean, useless, but great. Like, Cabal gave up trying to find a verb in that sentence. Like,
exactly.
I actually laughed out loud at that. So, you know, I think it is great character development. You can almost hear the mayor and like guess the archetype just from the way that it's written, you know? Like, it's, I don't know. I feel like I've met dudes like the mayor in my time. At some point.
For
like,
sure.
You know, like
for sure.
Pomp and circumstance, not a lot of substance, as you say.
I find the average customer is like that.
Welcome to retail with Jess.
They just say way more than they need to. Like, just give me your items, let me scan it and leave.
There's I don't care no about need. Your life story.
No, I really don't.
Don't tell me how your day is going.
I just, the people who want to be like, how's your day? What did you do? Any plans for the, just leave.
I work here. Go it away. Sucks. Leave. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
Everyone's always like, don't you prefer to have more customers? Because then you've got things to do. I'm like a ball. Like, I'd way rather be filling in my soul chart all night. No. Get out of here. I can entertain myself just fine.
Jess hands over the receipt. Here, just sign the back. That's funny. So, well, and again, if I ever suffer brain damage, I know there's always a career waiting for me in local politics. I feel like that almost needs to be like a Twitter, you know, like that's...
It's so quotable.
Yeah. That's a statement.
I'm sure that I'd almost rather give the credit to Twitter than JLH. That's probably where he got it first, because that is so...
It's well known.
To be fair, though, in small little towns like this, normally local mayors are like cats and dogs.
What? What does that mean?
In small little towns, they always elect cats and dogs to be their mayors.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
So this is like, maybe like, this is just like, you know, this is Never Never England. A human got the job, but still the same level of efficiency. This is wildly off topic. It doesn't matter. But
I'm trying to go where you're going, Jess. That's all. I'm just trying to go where you're going.
It's true. Google it. There's so many cats and dogs that are the mayor of tiny little American towns.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So we're back in the carnival and the ugly man and the fat ugly man come to Bobbin's stall.
Oh my God, I love Bobbins. Love Bobbins.
And they try to throw a ping pong ball into a goldfish, and unfortunately for their plans, they win. Whoops.
Woohoo.
Bobbins is really a fabulous character.
He's so
like,
good.
Just so wonderful with that Brasso metal polish.
Right.
Doing everything brightly.
He's created by Cabal's tinkering and the inclusion of a Brasso metal polish. As a result, everything that Bobbins did, he did brightly. And honestly, for me, Bobbins is my favorite only because of the author, like the repetition of the brightly. You know, like he just keeps bringing it back and bringing it back.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Everything about Bobbins is brightly.
Yeah.
And, so,
or not so, not quite as brightly.
Not so brightly.
Yeah. But you won, said Bobbins, slightly less brightly.
I like it too, that it's just a little bit more hinting towards the fact that Johannes Cabal can change the recipe and get different results.
And
you know, you're not going to always end up with a Mr. Bones every single time.
I think it's fun. Like, I feel like, you know, it's sort of like JLH's version of The Sims, where he gets to like, okay, so if I were creating a character from a necromantic scratch recipe.
Does the man just walk around his house looking
like,
at stuff?
Like, yeah.
Like, shoelaces.
Shoelaces. What would that do to a person?
Nail polish. What can I?
My wife's hairspray. How does that affect the mix of a human?
Yeah.
Or a human-ish.
You get a hairband.
Right? Like what?
An 80s metal hairband. Yeah!
I don't know if he has kids, but it's like, you know, you like release them out into the back porch and you're like, everybody come back with 5 items.
We're going to create a
stick. We've got gum. We've got a random plastic bag. Okay.
MacGyver's Guide to Creating a Creature.
MacGyver's Necromancy by JLH.
Yep. That's so funny.
So Anders and Kroll are very dull-witted, and as demonstrated by their inability to get past the fact that they won
at
fishbowl toss and then call cheats anyway.
Well, are they dumb or are they just manipulating the situation?
Yes. I don't think that it's that they couldn't get over the fact that they came to cause havoc and chaos, and they did that.
It's like those guys
in
the bar.
They don't improv very well.
No, it's like those guys in the bar that you meet. You talk to them for 2 minutes or you see them interact with others for 2 minutes and you know they're just wanting a fight. Like
totally, yeah.
You know, like somebody steps on their toe accidentally and they're ready to take them out outside. And you're like, okay, really? Like,
well, you get even. Like, there's a little bit of like catcalling that's bad. But you can almost understand that, like, the guys calling it, they don't realize it's bad. They just legitimately, like, they're just having fun, right? And then there's the cat calling that is, like, purposefully in your face, insulting, meant to, like, make your boyfriend or guy friends or whoever's there want to pick a fight, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit more on that edge of just, like, listen, no matter what, we're going to see this through. So they instantly go on the offensive right away, despite the fact that they won at this carnival game. They're like, well, that doesn't matter. We're here to bitch and whine and we need a reason. And even then, they could have just taken a pickaxe to a stall, right? Even going on with the charade that the game was a cheat, like it gives them any sort of legitimacy is already just a bit...
Well, but the charade allows them to hide behind the true motive, right? Like, if it's just a bunch of people getting pissed off at a game, that's an isolated incident versus, oh no, we're actually trying to fuck shit up for a competing carnival, right?
Maybe
which
to help
we find
bring
out
in,
a little later into the chapter.
Maybe to bring others into the folds, then potentially, yeah, that does help rile things up.
No.
But it still seemed...
little excessive.
Almost unnecessary, yeah. Like, it is fun, and it does, you know. And again, like, it almost gives this presentation of them being dull, but as we find out, I mean, it has nothing to do with them being stupid or not. It just has everything to do with them wanting to fuck shit up.
Right, yeah. Just single-mindedly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're here on a mission, and we'll find a way to make it happen. Because that's what we get paid to do. Her, her.
Her, her, her. So, yes. So.
Tanzin and I were talking about this morning. There's a few points in which, you know, throughout this book where the her is used. And we were trying to do our best her, yeah. her. So we were thinking we should open it up to the
her,
audience.
Her, her.
Yeah, oh, that's not bad. Mm-hmm. That's not bad.
Her, her, her.
I like that, yeah.
So we were thinking we should put it out to the audience.
Gotta get some men on this podcast for their her, her,
right?
Her, her.
Like, who in the audience could actually provide us with a better her, her, her?
It's a scam.
Yeah.
Maybe that should have been like the episode title should have been her, her, her.
Her, her, her.
You know I'm going to bring that up sometime completely randomly. I'm going to just do a random her, 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 make you laugh.
Like it.
Hopefully at the most inopportune, awkward time.
So cut to a new scene of Cabal on the premises, just doing his proprietor duties.
Yes.
Switching out the music, living his life.
And he finds out there's some issues. Trouble in the midst.
A wee bit of trouble, which I like how he goes to rush off and find his brother at the Tunnel of Love, luring in this woman.
Yeah.
Okay, and that line, you can't go leaving mesmerized women littering up the place, he snapped. It's, I don't know, unhygienic. Look. Horst was clearly up to, you know,
well,
being Horst.
Yeah, and this is the first time that we've seen Horst being Horst, though. Because
true.
Thus far, Horst being Horst has been a fairly charismatic, level-headed guy where Cabal is not.
But we know he's a ladies' man. Like, we know he's a ladies' man. Do we?
We know.
We?
Well, I
think
we
know Horst is described as being...
Maybe potentially hinted at, but we haven't seen it yet.
Right.
Or he's even said, you know, like his brothers argued Cabal has... thoughts that led to it being like, yeah, my brother is charismatic ladies man who wastes his time, like, oh, blah, blah, I don't have time for the same shenanigans that he does.
Wow.
And it's also somewhat hinted here that he's like, you know, not just a ladies man, but using vampiric seduction techniques, you know, which is, again, all brand new, because up until the crypt, it seems like he's been more or less hiding that or suppressing it, other than going to bed during the day, right? He's been very much...
Or no real opportunities. Like, you know, they've been...
Either way, it
battling
seems...
shit for a while. Now they're a little more established in
maybe.
Their routines. He's looking for love in all the weird places.
It's hard to know how far into this we are. So it's possible that, yeah, we've just ghosted over the first few times that it happened. But, yeah, it does take them
a
substantial amount of time for a horse to actually be a vampire sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Other than the original crypt scene.
That's true.
Well, I think that he is a little bit adverse to it, except when it serves him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact is that he's hungry.
That's fair.
So
we've seen the super strength and the super speed.
So
this is just the first time it's been seduction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he often, like, I mean, he's always put in counterpoint to, you know, Johannes's sexlessness, right? Like, he even mocks Johannes about that, like, bit of being a bit of a eunuch of sorts, you know, so.
Good old brother ribbing.
You know? Gotta have equals and oppositions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found what was funny about that whole mesmerism scene is that he asked Bones to put a blanket over her. I mean, what else do you do with the mesmerized women besides?
Cover my lunch for me.
Literally.
I'll be back to eat the rest of that later.
Cellophane lady.
So Horst and Johannes make it to the stall in the fight. And Horst picks up a man who was trying to set fire to a coconut shy by the scruff of his neck, told him he was bad, and threw him to the next field, which happened to be on the other side of the river.
Oh my God. And the man's, sorry, just carry on. The man's despairing scream diminished into the night sky, did a lot to calm matters. Cabal went around and did some further calming with his stick. Like, and then refers later, after a few minutes of applied physical diplomacy. I love that.
I'm going to use diplomacy.
Yeah, I'm going to use that from now on. No. I didn't whack her. I just used physical diplomacy.
Applied.
Applied physical diplomacy.
Yeah, and then there's this whole, like, reminiscent of a school scene where the teacher is like, who the hell started this? And they all are, like, shunned into the former relics of their childish past selves. Tail between their legs and suddenly like, oh dear, we're all about to be in trouble.
Right. And they just all, like, they all accept Cabal as an automatic authority figure. Yeah. They just accept
They're cowed instantly. Okay, but to be fair, the stick helps.
Before we run further, I once again bring back the brightly. They've gone, said a faint voice from the wreckage of a stall, faint, pained, but still eager to please, in a word, bright.
Like, who could it be?
Don't forget Bobbins. Bobbins.
Yeah, buried beneath the rubble.
Of the chaos that was created. Yeah. Absolutely.
And now all of these, you know, cowed men, and generally speaking, adults are typically, like, you reach a certain point when, yeah, like, you don't have to eat all your vegetables, you don't have to go to bedtime, like, you are in charge of your person all the time, and you're not used to being told about. So it's very funny to instantly see moments like this in real life and in the book, where they're all just like, oh, I'll please you, let me make it up to you, I can be a good boy.
Funny how Cabal has that effect on people sometimes.
Oh, weird, eh? So, yeah. So, the former mob dig out Bobbins.
And they find a pickaxe handle, which I suppose this is probably the modern equivalent of, like, saying finding a baseball bat is what I kind of figured.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Because those, like, a bludgeoning
object.
Like,
bludgeoning object.
I suppose in coal mining days, that would have been something that would have been around. Right now?
Yeah.
Baseball bat.
I don't know when the last time I've seen a pickaxe was.
Baseball bat, yeah.
I'm trying to figure out when the last time I saw a baseball bat was. Hashtag not a sports person.
Horst and Cabal pretty much determined that this must have been a premeditated attack on the carnival.
Yes.
Which is a shame. And then Horst gets to finally, you know, step into his real Horst.
Horstness?
Yeah.
Where he's horsty.
Horstlessness?
I don't know what the word I was going to go with there, but his Horst tendencies of making Cabal feel like a social pariah.
His brotherly duties.
Exactly, yeah. Neener, neener, neener. I know shit that you don't.
Cabal was like, yes, yes, you know more than I do. Just get on with the ephemeral details. Oh, esoterica. There we go.
That's a good word, too.
Right? I just love the vocabulary that is used by the author, even though I can't pronounce any of it.
Yeah, he's got a word of the day calendar.
Yeah, definitely. Ebullient.
Yeah.
I'm going to find a way to use that.
Not to insult JLH's potential word knowledge. Maybe he is just, like, reigning champion of Scrabble, but...
Probably.
But right. I feel that, yeah, occasionally the words just go a little bit off the deep end of, like, okay, you could just say smart. I've got a dictionary every time I read this book. I'm not smart enough for this.
I always find I learn so much.
Yeah.
Well, and other funny words, too, thrown in for good measure, like I was saying, like, chapter 9, we see the word collywobble. For a stomach ache. I'm like,
And I didn't think it was a real word.
I didn't think it was a real word either. I'm like, isn't this like the Alice in Wonderland? Was Smythe Toves and the Brindle Gook or whatever?
Collywobbles, clearly.
You know what I'm talking about.
Right, yeah.
What is that? You know what I'm talking about. See, this is the problem with sounding clever on air. It's like, I never remember what the hell I'm referring to, but it's in my head.
Something smart. Something smart.
Something smart. I'm saying something smart something now. Smart. Something smart now. Please say something smart. So yes, we're introduced to the competitor butlers.
Yes.
Traveling amusements.
Angry because the Cabal Bros Carnival is taking up all of the money in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is a little bit of a rock and hard place, because if they made their carnival free, they'd only have that many more customers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of don't have a choice but to take the money regardless of whether or not they need it, which they do have some upkeep costs, but...
You know, I have to say before we get too far, there's a quote that Cabal says, I suppose this means we'll have to kill them, Cabal says finally. Think of the fuss. No, they're businessmen. We'll do a deal. Believe me, they'll listen to reason. And I was thinking Gamal should have really listened to his first instinct and just killed Billy Butler on sight.
It
would have saved him.
You know?
Listen, Horst. Motherfucker.
Right.
And so he heads off with Joey Granite, his muscle, and a wad of cash for potential quote-unquote negotiations.
I love Joey Granite.
He's great.
Real good.
He's like the antithesis of the muscle head, you know? Like, you always expect the dumb bodyguard, but, like, he's actually really smart.
You're really smart. Like,
smart Hulk.
Yeah. Well, really, really well spoken.
Absolutely.
So this is when I start to see this back and forth between the little devil on your shoulder metaphor, where both in real life and in the books, you know, you've got this constant, are you doing bad because you are bad? Or are you doing bad because Satan is whispering in your ear? And this entire storybook is like, we don't always know because Satan is a real player, right? Like, how often is it just the people being shitheads? Or can you always put it on Satan to be the one?
How much is free will versus
right?
How much is...
And it's hard to say because even in real life, you've got people who always will pin it on Satan, right? And so even in these books, it's just like nonstop when you've got these issues between people, you've got these bad decisions on people. It's like, is Satan whispering in your ear or not? Because he's a real legitimate character. Can we always just put it on him or not? Between this chapter and the next chapter that I was very much like, when is he on people's shoulder? When is he really working and when is he not? And is he just always there in the background? Like, he's not even conscientious of it? Or is it giving that too much credit and the people just suck?
Right.
It's hard to decide for this sort of story where Satan is real.
Good point. Good point.
I don't know.
Where's the angel, though?
Well, yeah.
He's got no angel.
Kabbalah's a necromancer. He kind of signed off on them. He did
or
not
his
ask.
Horse, his horse is his.
Right.
You know, because it's like there's often...
Yeah, voice of reason.
Yeah. Like, there is a bit of a moral compass there.
Right.
So.
As much as Cabal will get anyways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And honestly, I'd say bring that question back when we start, when we get towards the end there and start talking about, like, you know, the actual interference that was played here.
It was like, that's what I'm saying. This chapter and the next chapter was when it really started to occur to me is like, when can we put it on Satan and when can we not?
So Joey presents the handle of the pickaxe as evidence and Butler denies any knowledge of it. Slow down, Mr. Butler. The transparent denials come later. Come on. And Mr. Butler's speech patterns, again, great use of language just to build character and that perspective or voice. Like, I thought that was really cool the way he talks.
I had to say, though, that hearing Billy Butler through the audiobooks was much more satisfying than trying to read that accent.
Yeah, wow,
like
totally.
That.
Yeah.
Like, kudos again to the narrator for the audiobooks, because that's just really just brought that speech pattern to life.
Yeah, like, you can't come round ear cues and decent law Biden folk like me of smack. Like, it's actually really challenging to read. Smashing up your carny without evidence. See?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there is definitely times the audiobooks definitely give you an advantage over.
A little bit of an enrichment.
Or at least some understanding of what the hell?
Yeah.
What? I don't understand.
I highly suggest to you, if you haven't had an opportunity to do the audiobooks, that in this particular case, they're so well done.
Oh, that actually reminds me now that we're talking about it. Do British people pronounce Tartarus as Tartarus? Because that's how the narrator...
Tartarus?
Yeah, they pronounce it like Tartar-us. Like, Tartarus. Oh. Whereas we say Tartarus.
Tartarus.
He's like, Tartar-us. And I was like, is that really how the Brits say that word? Or like,
I
like,
don't
should
think
I...
I've never had a conversation with a Brit about Tartarus.
I was just like, I don't want to give too much credit to the narrator just because he sounds like the smartest man on earth. I don't necessarily always trust his pronunciations, but I know, you know, the British pronounce everything wrong.
Dear UK-based patrons.
Hated the English language. You were wrong.
A, how do you pronounce this? And B, we're sorry for Jess being offensive.
No. Learn how to pronounce words correctly.
2 out of 3 hosts disagree.
They invented English.
They did it wrong.
Wow.
Anyways, people think that, like, English was originally spoken with an American accent and that they developed the accent after the Americans annexed themselves to distinguish themselves apart from them. That is a running theory. People think that Shakespeare sounds better in American accent.
Huh.
Is
this Do American people think Shakespeare sound better in
American people have never even heard of Shakespeare.
Wow. And it just gets
better. Let me offend them all. Give me another country. Let me do it.
What caused World War III? Well, you see, there was a podcast host named Jess in Calgary, Canada.
Would love to have that kind of legacy.
Wow.
Well, now that was quite the tangent. That was wonderful.
I think that that all was relevant.
So Joey gets Anders and Kroll to admit that Butler sent them. Cabal barely prevented Joey from smashing Kroll and Anders together to make something with too many limbs and not enough heads.
Though, Joey, visuals. Joey and his her.
Oh, is that where the her?
Yeah, Cabal threatens to rip up the carnival to get Kroll and Anders, to which Joey adds, to make them eat it, her.
I'll make them eat it, her.
To which Butler accepts the challenge foolishly, and so it takes them 7 minutes to find the culprits. Like through the entire that carnival.
Sorry, I'm still
there. It's good. Interrogate them. Yeah, 7 minutes to find the culprits, interrogate them, and bring them back with pickaxes in their mouth. Like, speedy work, gentlemen. Speedy work.
Talking was proving difficult with half a shattered pickaxe handle shoved in their respective mouths. That's funny. So, yes.
Yeah. Cabal threatens them with murder and to the lower pits of hell. And a Butler again accepts the challenge because he's foolish.
The dude on the audiobook makes it sound really funny, too. But yes, the visuals on smashing them together and have multiple limbs and heads just...
Right.
Yeah.
I actually saw that in my head when it was like some kind of weird Dali-esque, structure.
It is his face. She went a little too visceral with it, unfortunately. Yeah.
Jess has a very vivid imagination, apparently.
It's a very weak imagination, weak stomach for the imagination. Either way, Cabal and Joey, job well done.
Yes.
Smack each other on the back, go home.
Well, when Cabal is sort of taunting Joey for, you know, the
being an idiot.
Well, being the fake muscle, right? Like that, you know, you're smarter than that, but you resort to this, let's all make him eat it.
Making fun of the theatrics of it all.
Yeah. So he says, I was merely extemporizing on the part you'd given me. Strong and silent is so passe. And then Cabal responds, and strong and stupid is at the thespian cutting edge.
He's got not much of a respect for the acting angle.
Okay. Well, you know, kudos on Joey for pulling off.
It's ridiculous because he was an actor at one point.
Speaking from his own experience, of course, yes. Yeah. Her. Really?
Her.
And the visuals just keep coming. Like, I love when they're back at Cabal's carnival, Cabal awakes, and there's a quote, just as dawn's rosy fingers were smudging the clouds like the finger painting of a hyperactive child. The colors were too gaudy for comfort. Wow.
Right? Just to describe fire. Like,
okay.
Wow.
That's a sky and a half.
Quite right? Some poetry.
Right? Mm-hmm. I love that part. I was a little confused on the timing in this chapter, I'll be honest, because it's like the fire had broken out at the carnival at dawn. Horst leaves out of necessity. Okay, so the sun had come up to find a scene of raging natural processes being fought to a standstill by unhesitating rationality and bullish common sense. The riggers and barkers had been formed into bucket lines, and finally a use had been found for Horatio, the human hose pipe. That made me laugh.
Don't get him excited.
And Cabal's creation's naturally rational with bullish common sense. So, like, he's surveying the fire damage, but, like, it wasn't clear to me at first. Like, did he not, like, we start the chapter with him realizing that there's a fire that's broken out.
Mm-hmm.
So then he goes and sees, and then he comes back, and it's another fire, or the fire's still raging?
There's only one. There's two fires.
See, and this is where I was confused.
Because the second one is a big fuck you. Yeah.
I thought there was only one fire.
I thought there was only one fire,
too. Because the first one, they're taking out the carnival, but there's no fire.
I think it jumps in timing.
No,
and then he goes and threatens Billy, and then he comes home and he goes to bed later that night,
and then he's locked in with another fire.
So there was a kerfuffle at first. Like, that
kerfuffle?
Was a kerfuffle.
That's at nighttime, because that's when the carnival is happening. So, like, let's say, like, 10 p.m. to midnight, okay?
Yeah.
He waits until morning, and he goes and talks to the proprietor. That's, let's say, mid-afternoon or something like that, because they'd all be sleeping in the very early morning after working all night. He goes and talks to Billy. He's like, fuck you. He kills Anders and Kroll. He comes back home. He does a bit of his shit. He goes to bed. And then while he's in bed in the very early hours of the morning, they set fire to the carnival. So Horst has to run off to bed before the sun rises.
But how does he get out of the room? Because Cabal wakes up in a locked room.
That's the second fire. This is what I'm trying to say. There's a second fire.
I don't think there is, though.
I think there's two fires.
Okay.
Because he goes back, and then because in the book, it's like 24 hours later, because they go to after, they threaten him. They go back. There's a fire. They go back, and he's like, I thought you understood. And then 24 hours after that.
Okay, yes,
yes, because there's two incidences.
You are correct. He puts out the first one, and all that was a problem was, you know, a couple of sideshows for concessions, blah, blah, blah. Then Joey and Cabal go back, and they don't say anything because they let the smell of smoke do the talking. I remember that line.
Okay, so wait. So let's work through the timeline for me.
So there's three visits to
Butler.
So Kerfuffle. They sleep on it. They wake up to a fire. He visits.
Yeah. He said, I thought we had a deal. Let's try this again.
Another fire happens. At Cabal's.
Yeah.
And then Cabal goes back for another visit. So that's only his second visit. And then Cabal drops the match?
There's the first kerfuffle, goes for a visit. Goes back. Okay. There's a fire. Goes back and says, I thought we had a deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you. He's like, but let's try this one more time. And he goes back. In less than 24 hours, there's another fire.
Okay.
So he goes back. And instead of actually trying to make another deal with him, he just shoots him off into space with Joey Granite.
Okay.
So, yeah, he sets him on fire two nights in a row. And then, yeah, the third time, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. See, that wasn't clear to me. I was like, okay, was there just one fire? And, like, but then the whole idea of, like, him being locked in.
It's roughly rushed because that whole him being locked in and rescued is just set in a flashback while he's standing on Billy's porch again.
Yeah.
So he goes from Billy's porch. Flashback. He's like on Billy's porch and he's like, motherfucker, I'll kill you. And then he says, 24 hours later, he was back on Billy's porch after an attempted fire had tried to take his life and he was locked in his room.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, that's why it's a little bit rushed there.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. So like some of these, it's like you skip over these parts or like you listen, you miss that part because, you know, you're doing dishes or something or.
Well, right. When you have to stop to, like, take out a dictionary and check what every word means, it can be really hard to stay on track.
That's the bonus of Google Books. I'm finding that at least I can sort of, you know, hover over the word and it tells me what's what. But yes. And actually, Tansen, you thought this was funny. A Neanderthal sat naked in a large puddle of water beside which was a charred sign reading the Iceman, entombed in the Siberian ice for 10 million years. What's happening, man? He asked anyone who came near him. Yeah.
The other part that I really liked about that fire, even the things from the ghost train were out and about running up to people and shrieking in their faces.
Well.
Although I'm interested and confused by the interaction with the two brothers for that first fire, because Horst apologizes for having to take cover from the sun, and Johannes just snaps at him. He's just like, meaning what? I'm incapable of dealing with this on my own? And Horst is just like, I'm sorry. I've got to go.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit 50-50. Like, sometimes it is just annoying when, like, you know, people are like, well, clearly you need my help. And you're like, no, I don't, bitch. Fuck off, right? And sometimes Cabal is like that. He's just very like, fuck you. I don't need anyone's help, right? I can do this shit on my own, right? And especially, I think, leading up to this point, he's been very fast to get Horst's help, you know? Like, when the first fight broke out, he went and got Horst. And he's like, bitch, get over here, right?
Right.
And a few other times before this, he's been like, hey, there's issues. Horst, what up? And I think just the inverse of Horst being like, oh my God, I can't help you. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Who said I need your help all the time?
Right. And I kind of wonder if it's a little bit of that brotherly sort of just think, conflict
as
there.
As far as I read it, it's just brotherly, like, whoa, 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 whoa. If I need your help, I'll ask. Don't come offering it all of a sudden, you know?
I've got another theory, but I'm going to bring that up later. So about that, that's one of my remember this moment.
Okay. Consider it remembered.
All right.
I forget. This is fire two.
That was actually fire one.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
Fuck, yes. I meant second incident, fire one.
So, funny interaction with Mr. Bones. I love that Mr. Bones is back. And accelerant? Yeah, smells like gasoline to me. Arson? Well, make your mind up. Yeah. As Cabal and Bones try to get to the bottom of what exactly happened here.
Right. And not to mention that Cabal... The imagery of Cabal after the fact, when he was getting all pissy about things, the imagery of a Cabal hissing and compared to a vulture. Where does Dale H just keep, oh my God, where do you come up with these things?
Right. And this made me laugh because this is my one issue with like most pop culture, like most TV, movies, anything involving a murderer. Never discuss murder plans with the victim. It takes all the spontaneity out of it. That made me laugh because I was thinking about like all the other movies you see out there where the murderer, the bad dude ends up going through this like 10-minute monologue about, you know, it's just basically
villain monologue. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the villain monologue. But I even as a kid, I used to watch those going like, what? Shut up. Like the longer you talk, the more it gives them time to think about how to get, you know, kill you.
Yep.
Well, and it makes I beyond being a funny line, this makes Cabal seem like he actually enjoys murdering people.
Yeah.
<right. laughs> There's that,
not
that little
the first
bit of
rodeo.
Going,
huh. Not just a necessity, but it's just a fun pastime, a hobby.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a subtle reminder to self. Don't do murder monologues.
Yeah.
So Butler finally asks what the deal is, but Cabal is like well overdoing. He's like, history. You get one more try. And that's where we get that 24 hours later, we're back at Billy Butler's.
So clearly that didn't work out well.
And why? Here's why.
Right. And it says the previous day's fire had been galling quite apart from the physical damage it had caused. Okay. So there's fire two.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
So we learn that not only had there been gasoline fire lit under the train, but somebody had padlocked Cabal into his study where he'd been sleeping. Fortunately, Horst opens the door for him. So he's...
Did you know you've been locked in here?
Yeah, this is very
casual. Yeah, thanks, bitch.
He rushes out and we see Denzel and Dennis again.
Yeah, they're looking a little sad for wear.
This is almost a fun chapter just because, I don't know, like it involves like almost the entire cast. Just knocking up around the spires like Bobbins and Bones and Denzel and Dennis. They're all just, oh shit.
Yeah, well, you know.
This place is on fire.
Fire in the house. Yeah. All family get out. Yeah.
So comical antics going on.
Yes, Denzel had been about to tell Dennis to get a head of steam up when he'd noticed Dennis's hair was on fire. That had been good for a laugh, or at least the grisly hooting noises that Denzel used instead these days ever since his lungs had dried out. Like, wow.
The realism of what happens when you bring a body to life, but not actually truly bring it to life.
Well, and all the shit that they've been dealing with thus far. Like, these two have, like, one almost, like, barbecued his forearm at one point. And then, like...
not enough intelligence for them.
And absolutely no sensation, apparently. Yeah. So, like, if shit lights on fire, the only thing that's going to tell you is the smell of barbecue. Like, you know?
Yum.
I'm sorry. Enjoy your lunch, folks.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to bring up the train for a second here because how the train decides to move on its own, I'm going to quote it. They'd still have been there if the great engine hadn't decided that enough was enough and started to move with a monstrous roar and outraged engineering. Cabal and Horst watched in surprise as the locomotive backed slowly down the track. Where it passed, the fire was sucked up under the locomotive's belly and vanished in a glimmer of upward motion. Within a minute, there had been no flames left at all except for inside the engine's firebox. A firebox that had been damped down and cold but 10 minutes before. Now it raged like a furnace. The brothers Cabal had looked at each other. There was still a good few things that they didn't know and understand about this carnival of theirs. Now it seems to me this indicates that the carnival is sentient in some ways. Like that even the inanimate objects that are not supposed to have consciousness have consciousness. And the engine is either very self-preserving and or is loyal to Cabal. So
interesting.
Either one confuses me because you would think that the engine is run by Satan and therefore loyal to Satan.
Right.
So why would the train not want to stay in the flames, right?
But
right.
Is that not interference?
Here's the thing, though, is that like Satan clearly loophole after loophole after loophole, right? Which is why I feel like the train almost has to be self-serving, because otherwise it's like, if you're serving Satan, you'll stay in the flames, right? And even if he's like, I don't know, loyal to Cabal, it just seems like, but why? You're not Cabal's train other than for 1 year.
Right.
The way that, I don't know, for me, the quote-unquote Satan archetype that I've always sort of found fascinating is the one that actually does believe in fairness and honesty, right? So like, sure, there's some shenanigans, but ultimately he wants to have a fair fight, right?
He wants a proper adversary.
Yeah, like there's no game in putting all of the stops against Cabal. Like there's absolutely no benefit if you know you can rig the game. Why would you play it?
Right. I mean, I'm very 50-50 on it because as we see at the end of this chapter, Satan is conspiring against him. So it's like, when does it count and when does it not count? You know, like if Satan just gets to decide what is and isn't sabotage, it just ruins the game right off the bat.
So the difference between mischief and sabotage, though, I think that's actually like, mischief is throwing in a little bit of a challenge, saying, all right, here's some D-bag to light your carnival on fire and see how you deal with a little bit of a problem. Like, if you take a look at it, like, from the perspective of D&D, right, you've got this game master who ultimately wants to see the story develop. They want to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you want the heroes to succeed to a certain degree, but at the same time, you're going to throw everything you got at them to make them, A, enjoy the ride, B, possibly lose?
I don't know. I'm very 50-50 about it. I feel like, you know, just because it doesn't necessarily equate in failure doesn't mean it's still not sabotage. I mean, as you see at the end of this chapter, Satan manages to make him lose that 2-week period that he had at the beginning of the chapter.
Right.
By the end of all these fires and problems and fixing of the carnival, he's only got 1 day now of an allowance versus 14 days, right?
Hmm.
And sure, technically that doesn't, you know, ruin it for him. He's still in the game, so to speak, but I would still consider that sabotage because we've got how many more months of this where anything could go wrong that does have nothing to do with Satan, you know? If you go down a wrong track that just has, which again was already kind of somewhat blamed on Satan, that just like who would come out here and switch the tracks, right? And it was kind of assumed that like maybe some shitty kids or maybe that was another guy working for Satan who just randomly switched the tracks and made us end up in the middle of nowhere and had to backtrack or continue on for a while until we got around. I just feel like it's still sabotage, even if he's still wins in the end. Even if you still win, you can still say you were sabotaged, you know?
Right.
And that's why it's like this whole like whether or not it's fair. And again, I'm totally all for if you read like the Satanist, I don't know what they're called, but the rules for Satanism or whatever like that, whatever they're
the Satanic Bible?
Yeah, the Satanic Bible, right? If you look at their list of like, I think that's like 13 things or something like that, like for the most part, they're actually quite sensible rules. Like all in all. But we have not really met a sensible Satan in this book. We've met a very, like, charismatic and fun Satan. Like, he's happy to kind of play this game with Cabal, but I wouldn't say that he's the same
he's
sort
dodgy.
Of... Yeah, he's dodgy, you know?
Right.
There's, you know, a million and one depictions of Satan and Lucifer and Hades and whatever else you want to throw into the throne, but I find that this version is not necessarily the most fair of them all.
Right.
Well, and here's the question, like, remind me how the, like, he was just given the train, or was that, like, other creations, was that, like, a droplet of blood plus his own creation? Like, there's
Satan,
not...
He was given a carnival altogether, and then an additional blood to go through with.
Yeah, he was given the train, and then he was, like, plopped in the middle of nowhere on Earth, where he then discovered his train and had to put it into working order. So I could see even from that, like, maybe
so
from,
did he give it the sentient, though? Like, that's
well, the thing is that there is no, we don't know where the sentience came from.
Yeah.
So it could be the train being grateful to Cabal for restoring it, or the train knows that it's Satan who is the reason that he's operational again. For whatever reason, like, these were trains of Satan's employ. Whether or not, you know, the original proprietors made deals with Satan themselves, or Satan just always originally created them.
So there's quite a bit of mystery to this particular train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we don't know. It is sentient, and it seems to be making decisions on its own. But we don't know what it's
but very
side it's on.
Very, yeah, we don't know the side it's on, but also like the decisions it makes are very limited, at least thus far, because the train's gone off track. It's not like he just knows where to go or whatever, you know? The train still is reliant on Cabal's decision-making process the majority of the time, you know?
Right.
But
I think
apparently
there's still a certain amount of self-preservation to it as well.
Yeah.
It's got a year.
We'll see.
It makes it. And I wanted to bring up that point because then we're going to come to a third point, which brings...
Tying it all together, baby.
Tying it all together. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So Johannes and Joey Granite knock Butler into the upper atmosphere. And they walk back to the carnival.
Of surpassing science and pugilistic artistry. It was a thing of beauty and kinetic poetry that might be long admired among people who enjoy watching other people beat the living daylights out of one another. Once again, it's the poetry mixed with the brutality that I really respect.
It's like you didn't actually realize you witnessed an act of violence until...
Right? Like... Pretty intense uppercut.
This is when Cabal and Joey make their grand exit to the horror of the carnival staff.
Oh, my.
Oh, dear. They're in hysterics. They're shaking their fists. They're grumbling and moaning.
Yeah.
They're horrified at watching their poor proprietor take to the skies. up until Cabal is about a mile away, I think it is.
Yeah, half a mile away.
Half a mile away.
He's like, wait a second.
Wrong here.
They were shouting rhubarb.
Fishy about that.
Those theatrics were too theatrical.
I have to quote this because every single time I read it, it makes me laugh.
She sent me a text the other day with this quote, and I was like, are you okay?
I have a sixth sense that tells me when I'm being made a fool of. Oh, I've heard of that. Clinical paranoia, I think it's called.
She literally just sent me a text with only that. And I'm like, are you okay?
I also have that.
That's funny.
Yeah. So essentially, thinking back on the situation, Cabal obviously figures he's been taken for the fool. Mm-hmm. And that this was all sorts of dramatics.
Yes. They turn around and return to a non-existent carnival. Which Joey is just like, oh, that's a neat trick. Cabalin stopped and looked at Joey, an ogreish man. It was very convincing in his surprise, but when all was said and done, he was still a product of hell, created by the very blood of Satan. How could he be trusted? Even Bones, his major domo, sprang from the same wellhead. Perhaps Horst was the only one he could really trust. Blood was thicker than water, after all. He had its relative density written down somewhere to prove it. Now, I think this is a very important phrase for this entire chapter. Now, I'm bringing it together. I'm bringing it all together now.
Bring it together. Bring it home, baby. Bring it home.
I think there's an underlying theme of this chapter, which is who can Cabal trust?
Hmm.
Number one, himself. He proves to Horst that he can manage putting out fires without his help. So that's the first instance where it pops up in this particular chapter where Horst is put in his place. Like, nope, go away. I can do this on my own.
Right.
So he proves that he can trust himself. And then the second one is obviously Horst, because Horst comes back and opens up the door and helps him out. So Horst is definitely somebody that he can trust, with minus the actual density written down. He does have that sort of kinship, despite all of their...
Which, I'm sorry, I have to interject. That's hilarious that he would, like, you know, quantify a statement such as blood is thicker than water. Of course, Cabal would.
Yeah.
Carry on.
So... I think the real damage that's been done by Billy Butler and Ragtag in this instance, which we find out, is the air of suspicion that it puts on everybody in the carnival period.
Huh.
So I think this whole chapter is all about who can he trust.
Huh.
So that's my theory on it.
Okay. So now I'd like to just add to that. I think, as we have mentioned many times before, JLH is a smart man. He knows his words. He knows his references. He knows his shit. And generally speaking, he puts most of that on Cabal. But here is a moment where I feel like JLH is smarter than Cabal, because blood is thicker than water is not the full quote. It is the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb, meaning that the bonds you choose to make are thicker than familiar bonds. That's where the original quote comes from.
Interesting. Okay.
So the fact that Cabal wouldn't know that is weird, because normally he's the guy who just knows all of these random little shticks. And so the fact that he uses the quote
to justify the brother allegiance
is strange to me, because I feel like JLH would know the origin of that quote just based on the rest of what we know about JLH's other knowledge, right?
Deep knowledge, yeah.
I just like, this is like almost to me like almost a red herring in a way. It's like, I do feel like from Cabal's point of view, he fully does believe this, but knowing where the original quote comes from and fully believing that JLH fully knows where the original quote comes from, I'm just a little bit like,
well, and I think that supports what Tanzan's saying as well, which is like, where is the trust? Where is the, like,
also true. Like, who do you choose to trust?
Shifting sands, mm-hmm. right? Like, honestly, I didn't know the rest of that. Like, the blood of the covenant
is stronger than the water of the womb.
Cause it's like, you tend to,
We all fall into, blood is thicker than water is the,
everyone
is the
says
cliche,
it, right?
It's a cliche saying. It's the one that everyone knows now, right?
Yeah.
So, it's just one of those things that I'm a little bit like, and again, it does support the theory. I mean, regardless of brother or not, Horst is the only person who was brought into the carnival and not made of the carnival. So regardless of family or not, it was still a choice on Cabal's part to bring him in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that ends up becoming a bit of a discussion point towards the end when you of course we're jumping ahead here in terms of like the conversations between Ratu, Slabuth, and Satan, where you know, Satan admits that Horst's involvement was a little bit of a surprise to him as well. Like, is it not in this? I think it's in this chapter.
Yeah,
where he's sort of like, yeah, that was a bit of a red herring in itself. Like, I don't know the exact quote, but it was like, wasn't expecting Horst's involvement, but, you know, hey, we're running with it too. Like, we can we can handle this on our side. So
right. He'll recover, unfortunately, especially with the help of the, his brother of his.
Yeah.
And I think actually that reinforced that, that who can he trust? Like, unfortunately, Johannes did most of the legwork in this chapter. Horst did some advising, but... And he did unlock that padded door, but for the most part in this particular chapter, it was all him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the supporting role to Cabal's.
Yeah.
Problems with those daytime chapters.
What's a vampire to do with a daytime chapter? So, yeah, how we discover that this was all a double cross is that basically Joey moves Cabal as Butler falls from the sky, earlier being pummeled into a low Earth orbit. And he makes a 4-foot crater. Corpse twists its head around. A little too theatrical to be convincing. That is you, isn't it, Ragtag? General Slabbeth to you, Johannes Cabal. So, yes, this half-witted attempt to make him lose the wager. Whose idea was it? And Cabal basically
surmises that it was Ragtag's, but...
Yes.
Ultimately falls on Ragtag's boss.
Yeah.
Yes. And so Slabbeth descends into hell as Cabal walks off after warning him no more interference.
Yeah.
Right. And this is again where Cabal even argues and he's like, this is interference. And he's like, no.
Yeah.
Right. Which is again, the conversation we just had is like, how much of this counts as interference or not? And Cabal tries to say, he's like, well, you're violating the contract. And Slabbeth is like, no.
What contract?
Yeah.
We didn't sign anything. We didn't handshake. It's the spirit of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. All in good fun. All in good fun.
Which makes me think about, like, with that, if they didn't have a technical contract by the end of this, like, who cares? Like, if he doesn't get it, he's like, well, I don't have a contract, so we could start another agreement going on, but...
Right. Yeah. Which, again, like, it's all fun and games when Cabal uses it for himself, but what happens if Satan tries to use it against him? Like, bitch.
Yeah, like, he found Satan on his throne in the Cavern of Lava reading a large print edition of Wheatley's The Satanist.
I looked that
up. Large print format, that makes me laugh.
And it's a real book.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Satanists is a black magic horror novel by Dennis Wheatley, published in 1960. It's characterized by an anti-communist spy theme. The novel was one of the popular movies in the 1960s that popularized the tabloid notion of a black mass. Yeah.
Yes. Very cool. So Slabbeth reports back to Satan that he managed to destroy 1/5 of Cabal's carnival before the brothers caught on.
Mm-hmm.
And... This I think this also speaks to what you were saying. Slabbeth questions the intent of the wager. And the quote is, from our past experiences, we know them to be powerful corruptors within fairly broad parameters. Giving one, i.e. a carnival, to Cabal is tantamount to conceding the wager from the beginning. And then Satan rebuffs Slabbeth, refusing to outline his strategy. So I guess my question is, what is the intention of Satan? I know that's a very big question.
God himself is trying to figure it out.
Many theologists have struggled for decades over.
I think Satan's actually just fond of Cabal.
I wondered. See, and that's
like
the
a
thing.
Cat batting a mouse.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like, so when we talk about the sentience of the train versus like, okay, so it's like, Satan, again, like talking about being a game master, a dungeon master, mm-hmm. It's like you don't want to fuck up the entire game. You just want to throw a few loopholes and a few little, you know, here, this is going to fuck you up for a little bit. Let's see what happens.
My only argument is like when you're immortal and live for a couple millennium versus a guy who lived to like 100 at best.
Satan's bored.
Well,
bored.
I know.
Yeah, it's a novelty.
But this is the thing, though, is that for Satan, he's just batting a mouse around without killing it because he's bored. But for the mouse, this is the most terrifying moments of its life. So for Cabal, I think it's very fair to be like, you are sabotaging me. And Satan's just like, bitch, I'm just having fun. I think both are right. But Cabal can still call foul.
Totally.
Right.
But yeah, so, and I think it is a fair point, though, on whatever, Radish, whatever the fuck his name is.
Retooth.
That, yeah, why give him the carnival? Because even at the beginning of the book, it doesn't make that much sense. Like, Satan's just like, sure, okay, right. Here, you have to get me 100 souls, pick a carnival, go do it. And even Cabal's like, I don't fucking want a carnival. Like, I know nothing about carnivals. And Satan's like, hey, it'll be fine, just pick one. Right? So it's like, why was Satan so insistent on the carnival? Like, just more fun for him. He just likes the carnival, right? So, again, more things to
And as Cabal goes through it, he realizes how lucrative it is.
Well, yeah, right?
He's like, oh, he gave me
the keys
to the
carnival
to
be corrupted.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just one of those things, which again, like it all does point to Satan just having fun. But at the same time, it's just...
But here we go on the point of fun. There's
and he still
also,
gets 100 souls for the price of one.
There's also, it says, Satan waited until he was alone. He glanced around briefly. If it were possible for the embodiment of sin to look guilty rather than pleased about it, he could definitely have been described as slightly ashamed. Satisfied that there was nobody about to observe his actions, Satan clicked his finger. The dog-eared old school exercise book, blah, 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 materialized in his hands. So then he basically puts in a revised estimate of how many souls Cabal has. Basically, it's Cabal's performance graph. And he revises the estimate and timing. But it's like that, why did he look guilty?
Yeah, especially because he smiles as he readjusts his estimate to be only one day left.
To put more excitement into his life is like how he puts that quote after. He's like, there, Cabal, a little more excitement in your life. Because he was doing too well. Like he was... Because he's so methodical about
and
how...
And so the guilt is because he actually likes Cabal on some level? Is that what that is?
I think so. Like, I'm still sticking with that he's fond of him.
Okay.
Or like,
love him so much, why don't you just marry him?
Right?
Well, even though, you know, maybe it's his forward nature, you know, like...
It's very novel.
Cabal popping in for a chin wag and
yes,
tea.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like...
it hasn't been done, but no, not to say that it can't be done.
Well, I'm sure there's a level of intrigue there. But the same is just like, you know, a level of disrespect. I'm still out on the fence on Satan about this. I just.
I'm just not sure how I feel about Satan.
I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Best
you know?
Quote from Jess yet.
He could be a fun character, but I don't know. Something about him I just don't trust. I don't know. Can't put my finger on it.
Could it be the embodiment of sin that he is?
No, one checks like out. That, I like that part. Yeah. That one makes sense to me. I get that part.
Well, the chapter ends with a list of escapees from the Laidstone's E-Wing.
The maximum security section. Yes.
We've got Alistair Baker, Talbot St. John Barnaby, Leslie Coleridge, Thomas Nashton Cream,
these
Frederick
are
Gallagher.
Like, if you actually read, like, Gideon Gabriel Lucas, the Bible basher, only dangerous to individuals with the surname Bible.
Yeah.
These sort of inept, high-grade criminals.
Yes, Leslie Coleridge, the part-time children's entertainer of death. That feels like a really good advertisement, possibly, like a fake ad.
I think my favorite was Joseph Grant Osborne, the unnecessarily rude poisoner. Of limited threat, but officers should take nothing he says personally. Or even Alvin Simpson, file missing, possibly dangerous, probably.
Probably.
Then there's Daniel Smyke, Oliver Tiller, Palmer Meadows, and yeah, that's some fun names to keep on the lookout for.
Because like, okay, so the last time we had an escapee notice.
I think this is like
the
third
time. They ended
up
becoming
now.
Part of the Maleficarian army.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right? So these are the carnival? So,
I don't know. I don't know. Like, who are these people?
This is a different, Laidstone E-Wing is different than the actual.
Right, but maybe these were the butt lickers carnival people now. What is it?
Oh,
butlers?
Butler. Billy,
butlers,
Billy
maybe
butlers.
These are butlers carnival staff now this time around.
Maybe.
Oh.
I don't know.
Each and every time the devils interfere with Cabal, they break out of prison in order to get some staff.
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting.
That's quite the labor relations approach.
I guess we will keep
just be like,
an eye out for the rest of
that. Do you need an army of ruffians?
Prison.
Let's break them out of maximum security penitentiaries and,
woohoo.
You know.
Yeah, I'll have to keep an eye out for more patterns there.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering, like, I haven't read too much further ahead. Like, again, I've read this a long time ago, but...
Right, and I don't remember either for...
It's like, do these people come back with any...
We do know, though, that this is the 22nd of December, though, when they broke out.
I have to do a little...
A wee bit of a timeline now.
Yeah.
Nothing like a Christmas break out of prison.
Did it say what month it started?
Yeah, the last night of April, the Walshburnacht.
Walspurgnacht.
Yes. So I think that's when our wager begins.
So this started April 30th. We're now in December. So this is 8 months.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Getting there.
Getting there.
This concludes our episode 3.8. It's a diddle. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling, and remember, Reanimation is trending.